Carlton Bourne edits the news.
Good evening, everybody. The one thing that pleases me particularly about the new time is that none of my listening friends are now going to write to me in protest that I am delaying the time of their going to bed. But one fearful thought comes upon me. They may now begin to write and say that I interfere with their dinner hour. Well, I'm sorry, but it does seem that no matter at what time a commentator goes on, he interferes with something somewhere. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee adjourned today until next Thursday after receiving the administration's bill for revision of the neutrality laws. This three-day committee recess was called in order to give members who oppose any revision in the present law an opportunity to study the measure. Now, that shows two things. In the first place, it shows that the committee has confidence that it's got the votes with which to pass the bill, and the chances are that they will have at least a 4-vote margin to report the bill out to the floor. You remember that the last time it was defeated by 1 vote. And secondly, it shows that we are going to have fair play in dealing with the bill on its way through Congress. And that's essential. It's an issue on which people are divided, and the very best way in which that division can be overcome, and I'm convinced that a good deal of it can be overcome by understanding, and the best way to provide understanding is to have full and free debate. Now, one important thing about this new measure is the restrictions that it imposes upon the president. Now, this bill is, of course, a neutrality bill which is invoked when a country becomes a belligerent. Until now, and under what is left of the neutrality bill that we now have, because you remember the most important part of it, the cash and carry provisions, most important, at least from the standpoint of many people, expired on May 1st. Now, what's left of it cannot be invoked by Congress, can only be invoked by the president. Now, suddenly, we are told that this new measure, which is now to be studied for a period of days before it comes up for debate, includes a provision by which Congress can invoke it, not only the president. In other words, if Congress, by joint resolution, finds that a state of war exists, then Congress can put this measure into effect, whether the president likes it or not. So, you can see there a tremendously important concession to those members of Congress who, whether justly or unjustly, have been afraid that the president either might not apply it or perhaps might apply it too quickly. You see, he has not applied it in the Orient. And so far as the neutrality measure goes, there is no war between China and Japan. Now, public opinion supports that attitude, because public opinion thus far has felt that by not imposing an embargo on munitions, we can help China. Whereas if we imposed one, Japan could still get what she needed in the way of raw materials from us to make munitions, could go on making them in her own factories, whereas China, which has no munition factories, would be at a disadvantage. You see, there's the difficulty. The moment you come to apply any specific neutrality measure to a given situation, you're so tempted to apply it in the way you want to, rather than to apply it in a neutral way, that is, in a completely dispassionate way. And that, of course, is the difficulty about anything that gets away from international law. It immediately creates a special situation which can or cannot, according now as Congress and the President decide, be applied. That, of course, is one of the difficulties. Now, there are other restrictions in this new measure. For example, it eliminates the very difficult distinction between war materials and war munitions. That disappears in this new measure. In other words, whether you export cotton to make gun cotton or whether you make the gun cotton and export that is of comparatively little importance to the belligerent who is determined to prevent that cotton for the gun cotton from reaching his enemies. That is, he's going to sink your ship just as quickly, whether it carries the copper that's to be used in making a shrapnel shell or whether it carries the actual shell. He's going to be just as angry whether you send the steel that makes the bullets that kills his people or whether you send the actual bullets already shaped. On the basis of our experience in the World War, where 75% of everything that we sold and sent was war materials, we never had a single instance where a belligerent was particularly careful to distinguish as between war materials and war munitions. And that's probably one reason why the President and the State Department and a great many experts on international law and on neutrality believe that we should not try to create that distinction. No one else, by the way, has created it. Long ago in the embargo rules, there were some distinctions, but now that war has become so omnipresent, now that war involves all the population, why, that old distinction between the manufactured munitions and the munition materials, as far as practical purposes are concerned, it has disappeared. Yet a good many honest-minded individuals believe that it's an important distinction to maintain, and a good deal of the debate is going to deal with that. Now, getting back to this new bill, it also imposes much closer control of wartime experts than is required under international law. So, the President's appeal in his message that we abandon our idea of neutrality legislation and that we go directly back to international law, that's not going to be carried out by Congress. The Committee of Foreign Affairs and the Senate have definitely decided that that is not wise at this time. And my guess is that they've decided that because they felt that, generally speaking, there would be so much opposition to that it would be better not to let the President have his entire way, but to work the thing out. And the President has indicated that he's perfectly willing to go along on these compromises. So, we're getting a bill which does make some very important restrictions on presidential action, which also eliminate certain distinctions which many people feel are unreal. Now, in view of that fact, don't let anyone tell you that the passage or the failure to pass this particular kind of a measure or any particular provision of it is going to make all the difference between putting the United States into war or keeping it at peace. That's a falsification of the issue. It isn't as simple as that. For instance, here in Chicago yesterday, I found two morning papers that were featuring ballots that they're asking their readers to send to Congress. And here's one. It starts by saying, "Do you want America's youth to die on Europe's battlefield?" Well, of course you don't. And then it goes on and says, "Revision of the Neutrality Act means war for America." Now, I'm appalled at a statement of that kind. It doesn't even say what kind of revision. It says just simply to make any kind of a change in this remnant of a Neutrality Act which we now have left, irrespective of what that change might be, whether we put on more restrictions or whether we take off restrictions, that any kind of revision of the Neutrality Act means war. Well, I submit that's unfair argument. That's not the kind of thing that we ought to be saying and doing in America in this crucial time. And I do hope that those who are listening will go beyond that kind of argument and will really try and get beneath the surface of the thing, and will understand that what we've got here is a very difficult distinction of what particular kind of an act is most likely not to get us into trouble. Because, believe me, everyone that I've talked to in the United States, and that's backed up by all the polls that have been taken, wants to keep the United States out of war. The Life Fortune Survey, which is the latest one to be made, found only 1% who said that they wanted the United States to go into the war. Now, here are some of the other figures. 83% want to see the Allies win. 37% are willing to give direct help to the Allied powers. 66% are willing to sell arms to the Allied powers on a cash and carry basis, or on what Senator Pittman calls the come and get it basis. Only 1% said that they wanted Germany to win, and 16% did not express an opinion favoring either side. Now, the mail that Congress has been getting, as I could see in Washington last week, is so far overwhelmingly against lifting the embargo on munitions. Now, I believe that the reason is a misunderstanding of the issue. And that, I trust, is going to be cleared up as a result of that debate. There are tremendous problems involved in this war. The Pan-American Neutrality Conference that's meeting down in Panama City today, that indicates some of them. And another of the problem, the human problem, is indicated by the voice of the Vatican that's raised tonight against the futile bombing of Warsaw. The official Vatican newspaper, Osservatore Romano, says this: news from all sides on the bombardment of Warsaw produces the most deplorable impression. Because of the frightful consequences these bombardments cannot fail to have on the civilian population, we hope these massacres will come to an end. The hope, alas, is vain. The passion of war cannot be held in leash by fear, but it is nevertheless important that those who believe in decent relations among men and nations raise their voices again and again whenever they are shocked by the events of war. We must not permit ourselves to become callous. Good afternoon.